First Peter, I'm going to read verses 13 through 17, and I'm going to read a little bit out of chapter 4, verse 12. Peter's writing to these people in Asia Minor, possibly Turkey area today. Asia Minor is writing to these Christians who are being persecuted. This. Now, where is the, sorry, now is there, now who is there to harm you if you are zealous for what is good? But even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you will be blessed. Have no fear of them, nor be troubled. But in your hearts regard Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that's in you. Yet do it with gentleness and respect, having a good conscience, so that when you are slandered, those who revile your good behavior in Christ may be put to shame. For it is better to suffer for doing good, if that should be God's will, than for doing evil. John 4:12. Look, do not be surprised by the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you. But rejoice insofar as you share Christ's suffering, that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed. You are insulted for the name of Christ, and you are blessed, because of the Spirit of glory that God rests upon you. But let none of you suffer as a murderer or a thief or an evildoer or as a meddler. Yet, if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in that name. For it is time for judgment to begin at the household of God. And to begin with us, what will be the outcome for those who do not obey the gospel of God? Stop there. So this passage got split because both of these deal with the same topic. And they have to deal with what the inevitable is happening, that suffering and struggle are going to come your way. And they're separated by, I'm going to be honest with you, next week, you just come and see what happens. Because this next passage, Martin Luther said this passage, I don't know, I'm paraphrasing. But it's probably one of the most difficult to understand. The message is clear, but the pieces are off, man. I can't wait to try to sort this out. But that's the next week. So that separates these two sections where Peter is saying, what he's saying. Let's talk about what he's talking about. So he's talking about persecution, right? He's not talking about like me stubbing my toe in the middle of the night. I don't know about you, but when I stub my toe in the middle of the night, I question the goodness of the universe, right? I just go straight there, rolling around the ground, wondering how anyone could survive this and why this is happening to me. I go there. We're talking about this. We're talking about persecution for being Christian. And we're also not talking about here about persecution for being an annoying jerk, right? And we're talking about being persecuted for doing all the things you talked about last week, for being humble and control, for putting the community ahead of yours, for believing what God said is true and communicating that lovingly, for pouring your life on other people and putting them ahead of you, for being like-minded and selfless. For being like that, if you're persecuted for that, that's what we talk about. And that's talking about persecution if for all of you wanting bumper stickers on your car and someone flipping you off. That's not the same thing. Right? I mean, separate the two. If you're persecuted for doing good, because there are people who do that. But go out there and they'll be awful and they'll be terrible and they'll be mean people in the name of Jesus Christ and the world persecutes them and they say, yes, this is what Jesus has happened to us. No. You are just jerks and you deserve what you're getting. Right? I need to be clear about that. He's talking about persecution that comes from being a true follower of Jesus Christ, living your life as Christ has said, as someone who knows that Jesus Christ has died and risen from the dead, and you're altering your life around that. And persecution comes from that. That's what you're talking about. He says this, who's going to harm you if you're zealous for doing good? Now, I think this means it was probably written a little early. This makes this pretty clear it's early. Because if this was happening, 100 years after 150 years, the people would have read this and gone, Nero. The answer is Nero. The answer to your question is Nero. He's lighting us on fire for his parties. That's who's doing this. Harmony is doing this. But I think it's probably a little before that. There are any influence or Christians under persecution, Christianity under persecution. And basically, I think he's saying this. Peter's saying this. Look, man, there's enough overlap. If you're loving the city like I'm telling you, love the city. If you're loving each other, we're trying to love you. There's enough overlap in our understanding of what is good, following Jesus, and the world's understanding of what is following Jesus. They're probably not going to come after you. What he's saying is this. Persecution is not inevitable. It's not always going to happen in all times, always. And this is it. It's not uncommon either. And it's happening in the world. Listen, it is. Again, I am not this, oh, woe is us, the country's gone a terrible way, poor Christians. And no, this is still a good place to live. This is still a great country to be living. This is not a political sermon about the direction of the United States. But I will say this. As far as how the country understands things, right now, if you were preparing your kid to send off to college right now, the books that they would read and the professors that they would encounter, the conversations that they would have, and how people would think about this, if they lived and believed in a biblical worldview, they would find themselves outsiders. They would find themselves made fun of and excluded at the very least. This happened right now. I was not prepared for what I encountered at college. I walked into one of the basic classes in my first year and basically just stood up and just gave a sample of the New Testament. I don't know why. But that was what he did on day one. And spent the weeks. He just simply did a sample of it. And I was unprepared for that. Luckily, I knew what I believed, so I just was ready to argue with a guy with a PhD who would talk about something that I had. But that was the atmosphere I walked into a long, long time ago, and it has not gotten better as far as that kind of understanding of the world. The understanding of the world we will encounter is directly opposed to the biblical worldview. We have to prepare our children for what they will face, or when they face something, they don't understand something. We have to prepare these children that we believe people may not believe, and you may find not just pushback, but you might be ostracized for believing the Bible is true. And if we don't prepare our children for that, they will be blindsided. So we need to teach them a theology of suffering. That's what it says. This is a theology of suffering. Here's how we understand theology of suffering. And this applies to general suffering too. What he's talking about here is persecution, but I think also much of the principles that underlie this apply to general suffering as well. What he's talking specifically about here about persecution. And he says it's a blessing. So we have to know what suffering is. The first thing that he says is a blessing. He says, don't worry, even if this verse 14, even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you will be blessed. He equates suffering and blessing all through this letter. Suffering and blessing, persecution and blessing are equated. And I want to kind of glaze over a very important part. I know that I believe it's important, and the amount of time I dedicate to it is not reflective of the value of the words. But he's talking about, yes, future blessing. But in the grand scheme of eternity, any suffering you face here pales into comparison to the rewards of an eternity with Jesus Christ. It's a future blessing that God will hold you and that nothing can separate you from his love. That is enormous. Never forget, no matter what you go through here, nothing can compare to that early Christian martyrs dying in Colorado. Very early in the church history. An 86-year-old man, they brought him out for trial and they said, listen, all you need to do is recant Christianity and worship Caesar and we'll not feed you to the animals. And he said, 86 years I've served him. He's never done me any wrong. I'm going to turn my back on him now. And he said, listen, well, if you don't defend the dogs, we'll set you on fire. And he said, why would I not receive your fire to avoid the fires of hell? The eternal scheme, any suffering you face is but a moment. And God has said there's a blessing and he will reward us. That's what Jesus said in Matthew 5. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So if you were persecuted for righteousness' sake, what do you get out of this? The kingdom of heaven. That's all. But then the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you, persecute you, utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so the persecuted the prophets who were before you. So true. This is what's promised. But I'm going to move on from that right now to focus on, I think there's also present blessing. Huge blessing. Huge deal. We can stop there and be like, yep, okay, work. But I want to talk about present blessing. Present blessing is this, that we are participating in what God is doing. God seems to be working the world this way. And these things that we go through, this person, the fiery trials, that's what he says in 4:12, blood, not be surprised. and the fiery trial when it comes upon you. That's a fiery trial. What he's talking about is this metal that when you melt metal down, and metal will wear down, and the bad stuff comes on top of it, you skim it off, and what you're left with is something pure. That's what he's talking about. These fiery trials that come, and they bring to surface inside of us hidden allegiances in your heart that are trying to kill you. I think this is what suffering does. It brings to the surface these things that you don't know that you're claiming to, that you are. I think that when things are going well, we can say, yes, I want Jesus to know me, Jesus, and we don't know how much our job means to us. And then we go through a fiery trial, and our job begins to threaten us, and all we can see is that job. Or our children. Or whatever else it is. We can have, in good times, Jesus and something else, and seem to navigate those things. But when the fiery trials come, it reveals to us these allegiances we have to things that can never sustain us. We go through struggles. We go through oppression. We go through these sins that the church is so often purified. And what's revealed in us is the dross that we need to get rid of. The bad, hard places in our hearts where we have worshipped another thing and given ourselves to some other thing. And people will say, Jesus, I'm all for Jesus. And then they meet somebody. You need someone. And you realize in that moment when this relationship gets rocky and you begin to abandon the thing that Jesus is, and you begin to focus all of your things here. And what you really want was Jesus and a relationship. And the struggles and the trials that come reveal to us that so often we are looking to another person, to another thing to save us from only Jesus' hand. Because these trials come and they reveal these things in our heart and they shape us because they rob us of these lies that think that we can hold on to those things. Because it's only when we know that Jesus is the truth, that Jesus is the only way to be safe, the only way to be secure, that we will ever, ever, ever be at peace. And there's no other way other than these fiery trials. So we have to know that it's a blessing, and we have to know that it is in His control to work good. I can't not tell you about. Oh, I'm going to speak. So, but I'm going to go to Genesis for a minute. Just for a minute. Genesis 45. It's so good. So, some of my favorite stories. It's so good. So Genesis 45 is a story about Joseph. So Joseph has, if you know the story of Joseph, let me give you a real quick summary. He was one of the youngest two of a man named Jacob, whose name sort of later changed to, also known by the name Israel. And so one of his sons, Joseph, his favorite son, the other brothers decided they hate him. And decided they're going to murder him. Right? And so instead of murdering him, one of them is like, maybe we should not murder our brother. So instead, we're going to just sell him into slavery. Then we don't have blood on our hands. So he sells him to slavery. He goes into slavery. For over a decade, he has ups and downs as a slave in Egypt. He's faithful. And in all these, he's lied about, he's thrown into jail. But eventually, he comes to a place where he's lifted up high above everybody else. Because of this dream he has, after over a decade, he's put over the Pharaoh, he's only second in command of Pharaoh. He's put over everything, all the food. He saves food for 7 years, so that he knows, God tells him he's a famine coming for 7 years, and he saves millions of people's lives. His brothers come to him because there's a famine in their land as well. And they come to him, and he says, he reveals himself to them. He says this, he's come here. They came here and he said, I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now, do not be distressed or angry with yourself because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. This guy has been wrong in all kinds of ways. And the people, if I were sent into Egypt, if you guys for some reason get together and sell me into slavery, first of all, let's have a call. Right, let's just talk it out for that. But if you did decide to sell me into slavery in Egypt, and you show up 15 years later needing things from me, I have all manner of diagrams and schematics of how I'm going to get you. Like I've spent 15 years sitting in my every day. And this guy sees his brothers and he says this, do not be distressed or angry with yourselves. He comforts them. God sent me before you to preserve life, for the famine's been in the land these 2 years, and there's yet 5 more years which there'll be a final harvest. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth, and they keep alive for you many survivors. So it's not you who sent me here, but God. He made me a father of Pharaoh, and the lord of all the house, and ruler over the land of Egypt. Hurry, and go to my father, and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made you lord of all Egypt. Come down with me, and do not tarry. Yes. Father, come down, and God, his brothers have replenished him. Right? Later, a few years, some years go by, they come, all of them come down. And when their father dies, the brothers will gather into life. Now he's in this. Now he's in this. So they come to him and say, hey, Dad said, don't take it out on us. And they come to him and say this. Joseph's brothers saw that. Your father was dead. They said, it may be that Joseph will hate us and pay us back for all the evil that we did to him. So they sent a message to Joseph saying, your father gave this command before he died. Say to Joseph, please forgive the transgressions of your brothers and their sin, because I did evil to you. And now please forgive the transgression of your servants of God, of the God of your father. Joseph wept when they spoke to him. His brothers also came and fell down before him and said, behold, we are your servants. But Joseph said to them, do not fear, for am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. So do not fear. I'll provide for you and your little ones. Thus he comforted them and spoke to them. If anyone had a reason to hold their brothers to the persecution of this man, this guy, sold him to slavery, left his family, put him in prison, not for a month or two, but a decade, over a decade. And the people that did this in cold blood, he says, I serve a God that is so powerful, he can take even your evil intent and twist it for his good, magnificent purposes. This is God's name. So we know that he is working for good. And if somehow he's recalibrated the universe, that somehow suffering matters. The story of Jesus is that, right? Like how the greatest good in our life is that we have made children of the King. How did God work that in the suffering that he serves? Somehow the universe has been recalibrated, or suffering has nothing to do with work, but somehow God is using even our suffering to shift everything and bring everything to him and to bring about his kingdom. Temporal suffering should not be confused with ultimate harm. His present suffering serves the overarching salvific aim of God. Suffering is not the final word, is what Peter is saying. I want to read you what Joel Green said. Joel Green said this as a commentator on this. He says, present suffering is not the final word. God's sovereign justice is. Little real. As those who we brought safely through both the ordeal of this, of the present, and the judgment at the end. This is what we must know in our hearts, what we must live out, what we must teach our children. This theology of suffering. Suffering does not have a final say. God's sovereign judgment does. And there is blessing in suffering. It is not out of his control. So, we have to handle suffering. And I think one of the main things that we have to do to handle suffering is in 4:12. Beloved, do not be surprised by our trial. Don't be surprised. When trials come in your life, one of the worst things that you can do is be surprised. Why is this happening to me? So we ask, right? Why is this happening? And Peter says, don't be surprised. This happens. God is working about a thing in his sovereign will to accomplish things. So do not be surprised, because we get so off kilter when things happen in our life, and we go immediately to this selfish place where we wonder, why me? Why not me? Why not me? If I'm going to ask why me, why do I have an amazing marriage? Why do I have a wonderful child? Why do I live that? We never ask why me about the great stuff we have. We only ask why me about the bad stuff we have. You never get ready to go, huh, why me? That's weird. Never saw it. No, you get ready to be like, yeah, I deserve that. You get fired and you're like, huh? It drives us to this selfish place. So we handle it. The first step is do not be surprised. And do not let it drive you into selfishness. There's a temptation when we suffer to abandon all that Peter has just said about a good life, about what it means to serve and love one another. And there's a temptation to think that we deserve little moments of pleasure, and we find them here, we find them there. And I anybody else with their feelings? Yeah, I'm not going to turn it down for me. So like, yeah, so you get sad, and you're like, you know what, I'm just going to eat all of this right here to make myself feel better, even though it's not good for me. But we try to find moments of pleasure, or we think that we deserve and have the right to be selfish and not be nice. You know what, I'm going to go back down. Everybody else needs to deal with it. Don't. That just drives you further into your selfish place of wanting. Don't. Continue to be obedient. That's what Peter's saying, is that when the trials come, continue to be obedient. Continue to be a faithful witness. What he's saying is, lean into Christ. Isn't it? Fearing God, fearing man, and the timer says, I don't have time to talk about that, which is really tragic, because I have a school example with Daniel, it's awesome. Luke, Isaiah, Daniel. You should stick to this point. What it says is, remain faithful. How do you do this? When trials come, no matter what they are, do we remain faithful through prayer and through worship? You ever felt so bad you're asking your church today? That's a lie from Satan, trying to rob joy. We have to remain faithful to the God who has given us Christ, who has strengthened us. And what we do is we become to lean into Him so we can give Him as a witness. Job, we have more faith from Him than I think any of us ever have, or any of us ever will. In Job 121, Job, at the very beginning, so much to take from him, he says this: Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return. The Lord gave me, the Lord has taken away. And he says this: Blessed are you. He goes on, it's good to come. Seriously, if you have never read Job, like this just litany of just bad advice, terrible comforters, good like, examples of what that's going to be like. But at the end, he says this in Job 13:15. He says to God, when you slay me, I will hope in you. Yet I will argue my way with your face. He goes, I don't think just accept this. This is not a theology of just accepting what comes and buck up and be happy anyway in the face of what comes. No, this is a theology that understands hurt and brokenness. And Job says, no matter what you do to me, I will believe in you, but I have questions. It's okay. It's okay. We are doing a great disservice to those in suffering if we don't let them be sad. Jesus wept. Be sad. But when you slay me, I will praise your name. This is the anchor of your life. Not having money, not having everybody look up to you, but the anchor that will hold you down, that will never shake you, is this truth that Christ died for you and nothing can separate you from the love of God and faith in Jesus Christ. That is the anchor that will navigate you through all of it. The fitting response to this that we come to take. I'm going to pray. I'm going to bring Gibson Almer. I don't see them. You're coming? All right. Yeah. It's our first communion. I'm so excited. That's right. Father, thank you so much for this gift of seeing these your children receive communion. That we come to this table with humble hearts. We come to this table asking for your forgiveness. That we come to this your table in expectation of hope. That we come here having sought forgiveness and knowing that through Jesus Christ you give us. Forgive us. Anchor us in suffering and in good times. Always anchor us to the truth that we are yours in Jesus Christ. That you have made us your own. That you have adopted us as your children. So we praise you. We praise you that you are a God that is not hidden. High priest is not unfamiliar with our groaning. And we have a high priest that knows of our suffering. We come to this table to remind us that your body was broken and your blood was shed for us. It's in Christ's name, Christ. Amen.